The mood in Xavier's School for the Gifted was solemn. Nightcrawler, Colossus, Wolverine, Rogue, Storm, and Kitty didn't need to be telepathic to sense his disposition.
Kitty, I'm afraid your parents have decided to withdraw you from your classes here. They realize how much you love it and that you are doing well academically. But they feel it would be more advantageous for you to be in a school where the pupils are closer to your own age. You'll be able to finish the week here, but someone will arrive Monday morning to pick you up.
Can't you do anything about it, Professor?
They are her parents, Kurt. Regardless of what we want or I think is best, ultimately, it is their decision.
You could at least try.
Kitty bolts from the room with a mixture of sadness and frustration as she phases straight through Xavier and the wall behind him. An uncomfortable silence follows, but is broken as Wolverine raises an eyebrow and glares.
So that's it? You're just gonna let her go?
It's not my place. And you of all people have no room to talk. Or do I need to remind you about your sudden departure to Japan without telling anyone? You're all free to come and go as you please, despite my desires.
Can't you do something?
I will not manipulate her parents' minds. I'll never do that again.
Never is a long time, Chuck.
Moments later, Kitty enters her bedroom in the residential section of the mansion's second floor, finally allowing her tears to burst forth. The emotional toll is exhausting, and she cries herself to sleep. She's awakened hours later by a knock at her door.
Kitty, are you all right? You didn't come down for supper.
I'm not hungry.
Would you like to talk?
No.
Storm approaches cautiously and sits down on the side of Kitty's bed, stroking her hair reassuringly.
It's going to be okay, you know.
Is it? How do you know? Did you suddenly develop abilities to read the future? None of this makes sense.
Sometimes life doesn't make sense, kitten. So it's up to us to make the best of each situation.
The best? Do you know where they're sending me, Aurora? The Massachusetts Academy. That's Emma Frost's school.
The White Queen perished at the Phoenix's hands. I don't know what the school is like now, but she's not someone you have to worry about. Your parents are only doing what they think is right for you.
Bullshit. They're splitting up and just want me out of the way. If they really cared, they'd want me home, so we can be a family again.
Now you're just being selfish. Things change and people change. Just because they've fallen out of love with each other doesn't mean they've stopped loving you. Don't let that stop you from being happy. They will love you no matter what.
I suppose. It just hurts, you know?
That's because you're growing up.
The two embrace, as a mother figure and daughter would. By the time Monday morning comes around, Kitty has all but accepted the change. Outside the mansion, everyone gathers around to bid her farewell as her driver arrives.
I will have the rest of your furniture sent after you, or to your home.
Don't bother, Professor. I plan to visit every chance I get.
You're always welcome. Anytime you'd like.
She makes her rounds, saying goodbye, and finds Colossus quietly waiting for her near the fountain away from the others. She sits beside him on the bench, placing her head on his shoulder.
I am not very good at the texting. It is difficult for me to express my feelings that way. But for you, Katya, I will try. That is, if you wish to hear from me.
There's hardly anyone I'd rather hear from more. I'll see you soon, Peter.
The two lock eyes as Kitty's intentions are clear. The bond they'd built in such a short amount of time told them that it wouldn't be the last moment they'd share. Peter clasps her hand in his, and he pulls her in for a warm caress before she is able to kiss him.
Perhaps one day, Kitty. For now, friendship is all I can offer.
He walks her to the car and holds the door open for her as she enters. The air is silent, save for the engine of the limousine as it pulls away, and her friends bid her farewell. 4 hours southwest in a sub-basement of the Pentagon building, Henry Jirek opens the briefcase before him and studies its contents. The man who handed it to him questions whether he made the right decision, but can only see his own reflection in his employer's glasses. Valerie Cooper, a short blonde woman, cranes her neck to gather a peek.
Well, care to tell me if this will correct our problem?
Miss Cooper, Forge here is the genius behind this. I'll let him address the inquiry.
Forge runs his bottom lip over his mustache nervously and withdraws a carbon black snub-nosed pistol with an electronic attachment where the sight should be. He hands it to her and explains.
The mutant gene is an abnormality that can be temporarily and perhaps under certain circumstances permanently blocked. This may look like a modified firearm, but it's much more than that. A normal human target will exhibit mild abdominal cramping, but if used against a mutant, the neutralizer will shut down the X gene, preventing any use of powers.
I intend to use it to bring in the leader of these so-called X-Men. She goes by the name Storm and has been seen aiding a woman named Rogue, who has collaborated with the Brotherhood of Mutants. We need to bring her in for questioning and possible criminal charges. And she's just the first in a long list of public enemies.
We need more time to test the weapon and possibly bring her in peacefully. There's no proof that she's in cahoots with the Brotherhood. I designed the weapon as a prototype. It's not quite ready for field use.
We don't have time for a test run. We know where the target is currently and need to make our move.
Just then, the door bursts open, and in enters a dark-haired woman with glasses in business attire.
The hell you do, Gyrek! Hand the weapon over! You've no authority to—
Really, Dr. Darkholm? How long were you listening outside the door? This isn't your area of expertise, and I've got plenty of authority in this case. If anyone shouldn't be here, it's you.
You can't take the only untested prototype into the field. We don't know what kind of harm it could do.
I understand your reservations, Raven. But if we have a chance to move on the target, then we have to take it. They've eluded us long enough, and the sooner we deal with the problem, the better it will be for them and us.
Says who, Val? You? I'll protest.
Waste of time. I'm afraid this one comes straight from the Oval Office. Like it or not, you'll have to deal with it. Build another and run your tests, Forge. Gyrich, proceed with the operation, but take care in doing so.
Raven grits her teeth as she returns to her office and slams the door. To her surprise, her tantrum hasn't gone unnoticed. An old, blind woman sits in waiting. Raven shifts from her human guise into her natural crimson hair and blue skin self.
Irene, I wasn't expecting you here.
Mystique, Rogue is in grave danger.
Cooper and Gyrek want to make an example out of Storm. They will take down Rogue in the process if they get the opportunity. And thanks to Forge, they now have the means to do it.
The question is, what will you do?
I'm not sure. On one hand, Rogue's powers are the cause of her misery. Losing them would be a benefit to her and us. I love her like a daughter, Irene. Her place should be by my side. If Xavier's fools are confronted by Gyrek's men, then so be it. I will have to hope for Rogue to come to her senses, or come crawling back to me when she has no one else. But you're the precog. You tell me what the best course of action would be.
I wish I could. But the past few days, my perceptions have been jumbled, as if the very fabric of time itself is unhinged.
You mean like before, when we tried to assassinate Senator Kelly and Xavier?
I don't know, Raven. For once, I just don't know.
The subject is interrupted by the phone. Mystique walks to her desk and answers.
Darkholm?
Raven, it's Forge. What the hell was that?
I'm not sure exactly what you expect me to do.
You just stormed out of the meeting. We had an agreement after Gyrek had that falling out with Shaw. I was hired as an alternative to the Sentinel program. But there are protocols to follow. My weapons were never, under any circumstances, to be used until I had them properly tested.
I gave Val my peace of mind about it, and she basically told me to mind my own business.
Doesn't she realize the harm it could do?
I got the impression she doesn't care. Her only concern is what her orders are.
Ray, I've no idea whether the gun will remove powers temporarily or permanently. Hell, it could cause incalculable damage and kill someone.
Well, maybe you should have thought about that before you made your deadline work. You could have said you had other complications and it wasn't finished. If anyone dies from this who doesn't deserve it, that's on you.
And if that happens, then the government can find itself another inventor.
A quiet area along the river in Caldecott County, Mississippi, is where one woman will always feel at peace. Rogue swam here countless times in the past, but today is the first day she does so with the ability to fly. Her swan dive from a high cliff perch looks extraordinary as her toned body glistens in the sun. The water is refreshing in the hot summer's day. Swimming ashore, she lays on her towel. Her bikini is bound to leave very little in the way of tan lines. That is, if the shadow that forces her eyes open doesn't block her light for too long.
Hiya, Storm. Didn't come all the way to stop a girl from some R&R, did you?
Of course not. I'd rather help put your mind at ease. May I join you?
It's a free country, but don't come too close. I ain't wearing much, and one touch is all it'll take to zap you.
This is a lovely spot.
Used to come here as a kid and the world got too tough. I'd watch the boats go by and imagine I was Lara Croft piloting them up the river into St. Louis towards a lost tomb filled with treasure. This tree and I have been through some tough times together. It's where I first learned about my powers when I kissed Cody Robbins. I kissed him and he keeled over. I thought I'd killed him. Then I thought I was crazy hearing voices that were his memories. So I ran and ran until the memory stopped. This is the first time I've been here since.
But those days are past. You no longer have to run from who you are.
Come on, Roro. I've been at Xavier's school for months and nothing's changed. I still can't control my powers. Heck, in some ways it's worse because I've been torn between y'all and Mystique.
We're your friends. I know your sense of honor and decency is stronger than you care to admit.
Decency's got nothing to do with how I feel. It's as if a sadist cursed me. I'm confused and angry most of the time, and I'm not even sure if it's me or the essence I absorbed from Carol Danvers that's exhibiting these emotions.
Do you not trust anyone?
How can I? How can anyone trust me when the slightest touch of physical contact might destroy them?
Rogue, every exercise of your power has been an act of violence. Has no one ever given themselves to you of their own free will?
Don't be stupid. It's a kind of living death. No one wants that for even a moment.
Aurora stands again and offers the other woman her hand. Rogue sits up, confused by the gesture.
You've had your experiences. Would you like to see the world through my eyes?
No! Suppose something goes wrong and I end up with your memories and powers forever while you're in a coma or worse. I'm afraid.
You think I am not? I am prepared to take the risk for a friend.
Aurora, I...
Her sentence is completed as they join hands. While Storm's world grows dark, Rogue's becomes a bit brighter. Rogue lowers the weather goddess to the ground gently as she stands and feels the very power coursing through her veins. Her eyes, cloudy white, see the very fabric of nature and the beauty it holds. It's breathtaking. Feeling the wind currents lifting her into the air, the ionization of her surroundings electrifying her fingertips, pockets of cold and warmth that she can summon at will. And though she hasn't full knowledge of how to utilize these assets, she marvels at their limitless beauty. Holding her palm upwards at waist level, a small cloud no larger than a coffee mug forms and rains gently on her hand.
Amazing! I never knew life could feel so full. But with the powers of a goddess, I'm sure it's a struggle to keep him in check. Perhaps me and Roro have more in common deep down than I thought.
A beam of energy slams into the newest X-Team's member's back, forcing her to fall to her knees. At first, Rogue believes it originated from a nearby touring boat. Then she realizes it came not from the river, but the tree line behind her.
Copy that! Federal agents! Stand down, Rogue. We have a warrant for you and Storm's arrest.
Whatever they hit her with drained her of any of Storm's memories and abilities. Had it been just her own, she might not be able to stand. Dizzying as it may be, she summons all her effort to fly of her own will, in hopes that they follow her before getting to Storm.
Fat chance in hell, meathead! Come and get me!
Take her down! Now!
As the squad takes aim, a sudden blanket of fog rolls in, forcing them to lose track of their target. Storm's outstretched hand commands the wind beneath her to carry her to Rogue's erratic flight pattern. Panicked voices of civilians on a boat below are muffled by the howling winds.
Rogue, I've got you.
Storm, they hit me with something. I can barely fly.
We need to find somewhere safe. I'm still weakened by my bond. I cannot hold us aloft for long.
Oh, I think I've got the right place, sugar.
On the riverbanks below, Gyric approaches the front lines.
Hand me the weapon.
As the fog clears, Gyric takes aim and fires. The first shot misses Rogue, who barely avoids the attack. Storm reacts immediately, trying to channel a bolt of lightning. Her concentration is broken when the second shot hits her in the chest, sending the arc of electricity directly through Rogue and into the boat below. The air current keeping Storm aloft ceases as both women plummet from the sky and into the river. The moment they hit the water, the boat explodes and the screams on board are no more. Gyric grins as Forge rushes past him with a shove and sprints into the water.
Damn it, no. No, no! This wasn't supposed to happen! Oh, please be alive.
Forge swims to Storm's unconscious form while looking around for Rogue. The latter is nowhere to be seen, but right now, the only priority for him is to save the one in his arms. Reaching the shoreline, he swats away Gyric's outstretched hand.
Thank heaven. Take my help.
I can make it on my own, Gyric.
I hope you're feeling proud. There had to be 30 people on that boat, and you're responsible for their deaths. Why don't you make yourself useful and find the other woman before she drowns?
The people are a casualty of war. The mutants are the criminals, Forge. I've no sympathy for them if they die.
This isn't a war! Those were innocents! Whatever Rogue did, she and especially Storm are innocent as well. Until proven guilty, that's the law, Gyric. But a trial is superfluous to you, isn't it? You've already condemned them. You and the government may see the X-Men as outlaws, but they're proven more than once that they fight for humanity. What side do you fight for? Because you've just made them enemies.
Forge carries Storm past the soldiers and into his vehicle. Gyric turns to the others who await his orders. He thinks about his recent discovery that the man whom he thought was an ally was a mutant himself. Since then, Sebastian Shaw had become an enemy of the state in his mind. He'd be damned if it would happen again with Forge. Those thoughts recede, though, as he realizes his employer will not be pleased at the current results.
What are you standing around for? Branch out and find Rogue, and see if there are any survivors from the boat.
I'm not taking the heat for this one.
Well, then I think you'd better help them search. I've got a phone call to make. I'd rather the Pentagon hear it from me first.
Hours later, in the safe confines of Forge's loft, Storm stirs to consciousness to be welcomed by a throbbing headache.
Ororo, my name is Forge. I brought you some tea and broth. I hope you're comfortable.
My clothes.
Well, you had fallen in a river.
So, weak. Tired. Leave me be.
Forge respects the woman's wishes and leaves the refreshments on the nightstand next to the bed. He quietly walks away, embarrassed by the situation. As the man ponders his current predicament, his patient descends the stairs wrapped only in her bedsheets. She's still groggy, but suddenly more awake than she appeared moments ago.
You should have let me drown.
Excuse me?
I'd have been better off. My abilities are more than just a great power. They are part of me. Without them, I am lost.
It may not be permanent. You and Rogue were...
Rogue, where is she?
Look, the people who attacked you have been searching the river without success. She either escaped or drowned.
Forge stares out a large bay window at the cityscape as Storm wearily takes a seat on the couch, careful to keep herself covered.
Rogue is resourceful. I'm sure she got away.
What brought you two together anyway? She's a criminal. She's worked with the Brotherhood. That's why they went after you. They think you're in cahoots with them.
What do you think?
He stands in silence, turning to her in anticipation of the answer he requested. The woman stands and walks by him to gaze at the scenery outside.
She's not a criminal, just a misguided youth. Besides, her and I have much in common.
Such as what?
When I was half her age, I was the best pickpocket in Cairo.
You? I can't believe that.
No.
The woman turns with a grin, proving her claim as she holds a wallet in her palm, offering it to him. Forge's eyes instantly widen as he reaches for his back pocket where it had been moments prior.
Well, you certainly haven't lost your touch.
I suppose I'm grateful. It's the only skill I had before I learned I could control the weather. And now that that is gone, all I can do is look out at those clouds. A day ago, I wouldn't need a weather forecast to tell me what was going to occur. I could feel power resonate through me. Now my mind and body are orphans in a cruel world.
Jeez, that's a pessimistic view coming from someone who leads. The world isn't always cruel, it's just how we see it. You claim your mind and body are orphans, but all I see is beauty.
I guess you would know, now that you have seen me so vulnerable.
Again, you see weakness, and I see strength. You're not at a loss for the latter.
And what would you know of loss? How could you possibly know what I'm going through?
Eyebrows raised high, he reclaims his seat on the couch and rolls up the right leg to his pants. The woman is shocked, as she not only watches him remove a metal leg the entire length of his limb, but also twisting the hand on the same side and removing it. The stub on his forearm is adorned with intricate connectors that she could only assume were the same on his lower half.
And before you ask, yes, all my other parts are in one piece.
His attempt at flirtation didn't go unnoticed, yet Storm contained any sort of response, putting him equally at discomfort.
You see, I do know loss. I may not publicly advertise that I'm a mutant, but without my knack for inventing things, I'd have much more primitive replacement limbs. When I was injured, I knew how to create a fully functional hand and leg that not only allows me to resume my normal duties, but do so much more.
What happened?
Afghanistan. I got too close to a roadside bomb. Or maybe someone said, not close enough. Well, regardless, here I am, a survivor. Half the man I used to be, but more in many ways since then. Loss has taught me there are always possibilities and hope.
Aurora finds herself running her hand along the metal leg in admiration. She blushes, realizing there's something in that moment between them. Their weaknesses exploited and shared. And perhaps something more. Forge places his remaining hand atop hers reassuringly. The two lock eyes in understanding. Then, with no words, they lock lips. The blanket around the woman falling a little more loosely from her shoulders. He pulls her in towards him, and the two fall back on the couch, with their vulnerabilities being only the first things exposed to each other. Across town, Valerie Cooper kicks off her shoes and pours a glass of Merlot. She sighs after her long day, letting down her hair and taking her first sip. Before she even has a chance to unwind, she unholsters her pistol with a sudden intrusion. Her door explodes inward, showering her and forcing her to take cover, unable to see her assailant.
Who's there? You've come to the wrong place.
Oh, I think I've got the right place, sugar. Don't you recognize me? Or did you forget what you were searching for down near the river?
Rogue? How did you find me?
Following someone is a trait I learned from my mama. Now what did you people do with Storm?
Rogue lifts the edge of the couch and tosses it to the side with little effort, revealing the blonde-haired woman on the other side. Val rolls to the left, takes aim and fires three rounds directly into the intruder's chest. The trio of 45 caliber rounds would normally hit Rogue as if they were mere insects. Her powers, still weakened by Gyrek's weapon, had protected her from fatal wounds, but she'd been hit as if wearing a Kevlar vest. Off balance, she stumbles to the wall behind her, clutching her bosom in pain. Val takes the opportunity to leap past her enemy and run out of the building. Rogue shakes off the pain by channeling it into an angry fist against the wall as she regains her stance. Winded and bruised, she follows Val and just misses grabbing her as she flees in her car. Val peers in her rear view to see Rogue take flight after her. Stepping the gas pedal to the floor, Val's vehicle swerves into traffic. Rogue catches up to her in less than a quarter mile and drops through the back window shoulder first. Struggling to maintain control of the vehicle, Val readies her pistol for another shot, but Rogue smacks it free, flipping it across the dashboard.
I asked you a question.
Screw you, bitch!
Okay, you don't want to tell me. I'll just have to find out the fun way.
Rogue reaches her hands on the other side of the driver's shoulders. As her fingers touch the woman's neck, Rogue instantly has flashes of memories that are not her own. The memories are a momentary distraction as Rogue realizes the error she made. Valerie Cooper slips into a deep sleep as her control over the steering wheel is relinquished. Rogue tries to adapt, but it's too late as the car careens off-road and into a tree. Rogue's body is thrown through the windshield and into the clearing beyond. Rogue struggles to her feet, relieved that her powers are all but fully returned. Then she looks at the vehicle and sees Valerie Cooper's lifeless eyes and awkwardly twisted neck. Tears form in Rogue's eyes as instantaneous regret consumes her.
Damn! Was it supposed to happen like this? Should have just told me what I wanted to know!
Rogue wants to collapse and scream, but knows there will be time for that later. Right now, she has a friend to save.
I'm coming for you, Storm, darling. Hang in there.
Checking her appearance one last time in the mirror, Storm adjusts her blouse and descends the stairs of Forger's loft towards a pleasing aroma. She enters the kitchen to an impressive display. Forge is stirring something in a pot that she cannot yet see, and offers her a glass of chilled champagne.
I do not typically drink.
This is not your typical meeting. Care to join me for just a sip and a meal good for the soul?
She accepts the glass and sits down. The two clink their glasses, taking a sip as she raises an eyebrow in inquisition.
I guess I can make an exception. And my rescuer is also a chef. Smells delicious. What are you making?
Not all Americans eat cheeseburgers and hot dogs, Storm. My native Cheyenne roots have taught me many things. This is an old family recipe. Braised bison loin with hominy and juniper berries.
I've had the loin slow cooking for a few hours now, but it's the initial braise on the meat that is that extra little touch. My people would consume a meal like this to give us strength and energy of the land.
Can't wait to try it. But you know, Forge, about earlier, I don't just do that with anyone.
Do what? Make love to a double amputee?
Well, that too. But what I mean is that I don't want to come off as easy. We barely know each other.
Oh, you're certainly not coming off that way. Oh, and for the record, I don't do that with just anyone either.
Except a damsel in distress.
Oh, I don't think you've ever needed saving, Storm. You are quite an impressive woman in more ways than one. We just had a moment and things happened. I apologize if I made you feel...
No need for apologies. We are both adults. But you do owe me.
Owe you? Did I underperform?
Oh, certainly not.
Then what is it that I owe you?
Perhaps a name. I hardly think Forge is what you were dubbed at birth.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess I do owe you that much. Jonathan Silvercloud, at your service. But no one has called me that in a long time.
Perhaps that's because it sounds made up.
Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I have to get that.
A landline? That's a bit old-fashioned for an inventor, isn't it?
Forge grins and shrugs as he picks up the phone.
Hello?
Storm watches carefully as Forge's expression changes to something of a darker nature. He places the call on hold and puts on a smile that is less than convincing.
Aurora, could you just keep an eye on the food for a few minutes? I have to take this call in my office.
Oh, no problem.
Her life experiences have taught her when something is not quite as it seems, and her curiosity gets the better of her in that moment. Quietly, Aurora walks to the door and gently tries the knob. It's locked. She reaches into her hair, retrieving the one pin she keeps there for just such a situation. It is a simple lock that she can pick quietly and with ease. Slowly, she turns the knob enough to open the door a crack. Hugging her back to the wall, she listens intently to one side of the phone call.
Make it fast, Gyrick. I'm busy.
I thought you should know that Val Cooper is dead.
What?
All the signs point to Rogue being at the scene. Those damn muties stick together. If she got any kind of information from Val, then she'll be on her way to find you. Storm is to be moved to a federal facility immediately.
I told you before, Gyrick. I'm the best equipped to take care of her. She trusts me.
It sounds like you're emotionally involved.
You're damned right I am. You pulled the trigger and shot her, but I designed the gun, so let me deal with it.
Forge's fists are clenched, but he relaxes them for a split second before turning and realizing Aurora is standing there in the threshold of his office, glaring at him with a combination of hatred, disappointment, and heartbreak in her eyes.
Please, let me explain.
Don't bother, I'm leaving.
You can't. You need to rest more.
Rest? I can do that at home. You're a mutant. How could you design such a weapon against your own kind?
It's not that simple. I designed it to stop those like the Brotherhood. It can help if used properly.
So Rogue and I are like the Brotherhood now?
That's not what I meant. I'm not your enemy. It's part of my job.
And you only follow orders, is that it? I'm no guinea pig, Forge. I will not be a subject of your experiment, nor a toy for you to just play with or get off to.
Stay, please. This will all get sorted out.
Should I? Should I live out my days in hope and slavery? They will come for me.
You have my word. Nothing bad will happen to you.
Your word? That's not worth a thing. You are the reason I'm powerless and here.
I'm sorry. What do you want me to do? Turn the neutralizer on myself? I invented the damn thing. I can find a cure and get you your powers back.
It's an empty gesture. You and I aren't as similar as I'd thought.
Look, if I was the villain you're making me out to be, I'd have let Gyrick take you from the start.
Instead, you have only delayed the inevitable.
I can protect you.
Forge places a reassuring hand on her wrist, to which Aurora shrugs it off and throws a hard left punch into the man's jaw, knocking him to the floor.
Do I look like I need to be protected?
You're wrong about me.
The woman opens the door to exit and turns one last time to look at him.
Then prove me wrong. Do the right thing. But I don't need to be here while you sort it out. Goodbye, Forge.
Storm, you okay, Gale? You had me worried.
Rogue! You don't know how good it is to see you.
Likewise. But Roro, I have to tell you something. And I'm afraid it's not something Xavier would approve of. He might kick me out.
We all make mistakes, Rogue. The fact that you are here means you came looking for me. And that makes you part of the team.
But what if I accidentally killed someone in the process?
What?
I didn't mean to, but one of the agents... Well, she wouldn't tell me where you were, and I took her memories, but she was driving and...
It's okay, Rogue. I think we both need to get home and sort this out. It's been a long day, and you can tell the professor and I about it. We need to get out of here, though, or things may get much worse.
Rogue wipes away her tears and hovers a few feet off the ground, waiting for Storm to join her. Aurora only glances up at her in sorrow.
I will meet you there. My powers are gone.
Gone? You mean permanently? It was that dang gun, wasn't it? Things messed me up real good, but my powers came back.
I'm not sure if mine will. One thing Forge mentioned was that since you've been overpowered by touching me, you might bounce back quicker. And since I was underpowered, well, there isn't telling if and when my abilities will return.
The professor can sort out both of our issues then. How about a lift?
Storm grabs hold of Rogue's hands, and they soar off into the sky. No words are exchanged along the way, as they both find peace in the fresh air. Only one thought crosses Rogue's mind.
Who's Forge?
I'm still trying to figure that out, my dear.
The Massachusetts Academy, the next morning. Kitty Pryde's alarm clock buzzes her awake. Her lack of enthusiasm for what's to come, combined with a less than decent night's sleep, has sent her normal, chipper disposition to some other land, perhaps where her dreams reside. She reaches for the alarm and is unfocused as her hand phases through it. The electronics short out, but the end result is desired, as the incessant beeping ceases.
I just want this all to be a bad dream. I used to think being a mutant made me an outcast, but here, I feel even more like an outsider. Barely anyone said hi to me as I arrived yesterday. Everyone is always dressed so preppy-like, and now I've got to meet the headmistress. I miss my jeans, t-shirt, and danger room workout already.
Kitty reminds herself that it isn't fair to judge so soon. By the time she is dressed and has had a granola bar she packed, she has convinced herself that she is ready for anything this day brings.
Coming!
Kitty?
Yep, that's me. And good morning to you.
Likewise. I'm Muffy. The headmistress sent me to get you. She's eager to meet you this morning.
Now I feel even more out of place. They call the principal a headmistress? What kind of weird cult school have I gotten into? Muffy, is that short for something?
It is as if the girl didn't even hear Kitty's inquiry and begins leading her down the hallway. They exit through a courtyard where groups of teenagers all around the same ages are dressed identically. The scene is more Children of the Corn-like than Kitty wishes to admit.
So, Muffy, how do you like the school?
It's the best place for people like us.
What do you mean, people like us?
You'll see.
The two enter a larger building and up a flight of stairs to the first door on the left. Before even given a chance to knock, it is as if the person inside knew they were there, and the door opens.
Come in.
The students enter the room to find a woman staring out a large window into the courtyard below. Her features are silhouetted by the morning sun as she waves a dismissive hand and speaks.
Thank you, Muffy. You may go.
Mm-hmm.
The door closes behind the girl, leaving just Kitty and the headmistress.
Good morning, Kitty. Please, take a seat. How are you liking the school so far?
It's... well, I'll get used to it. It's a beautiful school. Just not used to big changes, but I am a fast learner.
That's good to know, because there is much you will learn here.
The woman turns to see the student, revealing gorgeous features and an unmistakable face. It takes all of Kitty's effort not to gasp at the woman before her, but it is as if the older of them senses her unease, and she smiles.
It really is good to see you again. You may address me as headmistress. Follow our rules here, and you will have a bright future. Disobey the rules, and well... I don't think you have to worry about that. I know you're a good girl.
All Kitty can do is pinch herself in the hopes that this really is a nightmare. Emma Frost, the woman she and the X-Men knew to be dead, was, in fact, still alive. How this could be, she did not know. But some way, somehow, she had to tell her friends. 3 months later, on a small island northeast of Madagascar, Henry Gyrick dials a number on his phone as he looks out at the construction funded by a Black Ops program.
Forge, I see you called.
6 times, Gyrick. It's about time you returned them. I understand you've been kicked out of the program.
Call to rub it in my face?
Not at all. I'm just curious. Why do you still have the weapon I designed for the government?
I think you misunderstand. I still work for the government. They just frown upon civilian deaths, even if they are a boatload of Mississippi rednecks. So I've been relocated, but I've figured out how to navigate around my restrictions. The death of Agent Cooper brought things to a standstill, but it was only temporary. The people of Genosha share my sentiments on mutants, and I must thank you for your contribution.
You mean the gun?
The neutralizer technology you patented into that gun has been duplicated and modified. Since we know it is only a temporary solution, we had our best engineers design collars that inhibit and negate the altered genes in a mutie. It's all thanks to you.
I didn't sign off on this.
Of course you did. The second you began working for me.
But I don't work with you any longer, so that technology should be returned to the rightful patent owner, me.
Oh, it is. The patent owner is your employer, the U.S. government. You and I may not work in the same programs, but at the end of the day, we have the same boss. I'd be careful where you tread.
Now I know why Stark was done dealing weapons with you people. What about Storm? Do you still think she's a threat? You need to leave her alone.
Oh, don't you worry. Storm and the X-Men are a minor concern. I've been told to stay away. A temporary order, I assure you. We have another target in mind.
Another target? Who?
Well now, if you still worked for me, you'd be in the loop. But since you don't, it's a need-to-know basis. Enjoy your day, Forge.
Gyrick grins with satisfaction as he ends the call and dials another number. An agent on the other end of the line answers.
Sir?
Status report.
Sitterp is positive. Target's in our sights. Just waiting for your order.
Good. Take him down. We want him alive, but if lethal force is necessary, I won't lose any sleep.
Understood, sir.
The call ends, and the agent, who is over 5,100 miles away, withdraws the neutralizer weapon from his holster. He peers again through his binoculars at the target. It's a busy evening in the streets of Paris, France. But the hustle and bustle does not distract the agent. He watches as the target sips from a glass of wine and spreads honey onto a cracker with cheese. The target turns his face to the side just enough to see his features against his ivory hair. The agent taps his earpiece and gives the order.
Alpha Team, we're clear to engage. Neutralize Magneto, no matter what it takes.
X-Men the Audio Drama, Season 3, Episode 9, Stormbreaker. Narrated by Sam Devereaux, starring Tari Peterside as Storm, Tansy Fennelly as Rogue, Jennifer Simmons as Kitty Pryde, Howard Hewlin as Forge, Joey Sorlis as Colossus, Rex Anderson as Wolverine, Ryan Lawton as Nightcrawler, Jason Rivers as Charles Xavier, Ian Schaefer as Henry Gyrick, Irma Glidden as Val Cooper, Dara Seitzman as Mystique, Margaret Ashley as Destiny, Jeannie McGuinness as Emma Frost, Allegra Rodriguez-Chivas as Muffy, Oscar Stavemeyer as The Agent. Original music by Declan Gilgallon. Assault Encounter and Conspiracy by FelizianStudios.com. Written by Rick Pepito, based off the stories by Chris Claremont. Edited and produced by Carl Dutton. Sound effects sourced from freesound.org and pon5.com. And shout out to our patrons over at patreon.com/scytheraudio. Clay Murdoch, Daniel Roberts, Eleanor Wells, Joshua Gunnison, Silas X, The Cellcast, Valiant Shadow, Tony Fielding, Alicia Simeld, Alex Painter, Chris Cook, Cody Travis, Dan Bloyne, Hurl3Y13 Tank, Jessica Thayer, Joey Scotch, Kian Washington, Matthew Birdsey, M Game, Nathan Sedano, RLT Sandwich, Sam and Olivia Sava, Eric Lawson, Kim Good, Orlando, Sneer Goldfeld, Evil Ringo, Frank Brunker, Michael Hamilton, Patrick Glynn, Nathan Marchand, TK Newman, Adrian Smear, Chris Gonzalez, Josh Yates, Joshua Stewart, Zach Adamson, and a special shout out to our top tier patrons, Brian Woods, Corey Schultz, and Nathan Pugh. Thank you all for your amazing support. We continue to bring these shows out as fast as they are. X-Men and all Marvel characters therein are copyright of Disney and Marvel Entertainment. This is a fan, non-profit production with no copyright infringement intended.